Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Super Rocking Supertone Show.
Who else could it be? Status Quo and Don't Waste My Time. The opening track from their fifth studio album, Pile Driver. And that was released on the 15th of December, way back in 1972 on Vertigo in the UK and A&M in the US of U.
And this is the first album that they produced themselves, wasn't it?
It was.
Recorded at IBC Studios. And recorded through an IBC console. They made their own consoles like they all did back then, you know? Now, I defy anybody that's just listened to that track to not have at least tapped the feet or got the neck going like a chicken. Because the quo, and, you know, over the years, people have criticised the quo, and I know they've done some dreadful stuff later on, but they were so cool at this point. They were mega cool. And the live shows were legendary because they were not just a good time band, every song you could sing along to, because they actually wrote really good tunes. And everybody says, oh, yeah, it's just 12-bar blues. But you try writing a 12-bar blues with, you know, honey, don't waste my time. What a great line, you know. And the melodies, they managed to put great melodies to a 12-bar. And Francis Rossi, he's not the greatest guitar player. He was never a great guitar hero. But I'll tell you now, you can sing every one of his solos. You can just sing them.
Yeah.
Because they've got great melodies. And Parfitt, Rick Parfitt, is, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the Stones and rhythm guitar players and Keith Richards and stuff. But Rick Parfitt, he just whacked it out. Great big thick heavy strings. And when it breaks down in the middle of that, and it's just like that, and the shuffle, it's just spontaneously beautiful. It's fantastic.
So what I really like about them is that they're carefree. I feel that, I mean, they were together for over 6 decades, not 30 years, 60 years, uh-huh. You know? I mean, and I found out that Rick Parfitt and Rossi, they met at Butlins.
No.
yeah, which is like a holiday. It's like a holiday camp, really, over in the UK. So it's just, and that's when they changed the name to Status Quo, because before then they were called the Spectres, and then and then they were called Traffic Jam. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so they went through this transitional period, and I always liked that. But when they, and the other thing I worked at when I was researching this was that after they kind of went away from the psychedelia, and they found in the early 70s when they found their boogie rock, their kind of blues boogie, and that's what they. So they had this massive following in the UK because people knew what they're getting, whereas they didn't really have much connection in America after that, really, once they had stayed
until
that
the Live Aid.
Well, of course, until then,
because, you know, rocking all over the world, I mean, it was a classic moment, and it's one of those things, because when you see that those performances from Live Aid and stuff, you know, Queen were amazing, Bowie was amazing, but Quo, when they come on, it's just basic 12 bar, and everybody, you can't help but enjoy yourself. I want to see Status Quo at the King's Hall, and I think we've had a couple of quote tracks, so I may be repeating myself here, but it's a great story. Their first single, I think, was called "Pictures of Matchstick Men," which was quite it was quite psychedelic, you know, as you said, you know, and it was only later that they found this shuffle thing. But I went there on a date with Jane Warren, as she was then, Jane Barton, and we watched them. And Ronnie Montrose was supporting, and they opened up, and they opened up with this very track. And right from the word go, there were three or 4,000 people just jumping in time, like pogo. It was like punk.
Yeah.
And they were all jumping on the seats. And at the end of the gig, it was all seated. It was like a boxing stadium or something. The seats, it was like matchwood. It was just like matchsticks. It's like they destroyed it. Because it was just, you know, it was such a fantastic groove. Marvellous.
You
Talking Heads, Slippery People, the live version from the 1984 concert film Stop Making Sense, which was shot over a course of four nights at Hollywood Pantages Theatre in December 1983.
Wow. Well, that video, or that movie, or that art house movie is superb.
People say that it's the best rock and roll movie that's ever been made, and actually, I don't disagree with them. I haven't watched it ages. We need to watch it again.
I remember when we watched it together, and I love the way that Byrne just walks onto an empty stage with his little ghetto blaster.
Yeah.
And then people start coming on in just one, and then another person, and another person. And it's like this fusion of theatre and mime and dance moves. It's just you've got to watch it. If you haven't watched it, yeah, you've got to watch it.
It's remarkable.
I don't need to tell you anything.
Jacket is getting bigger during the whole performance. Scene, his jacket, his shoulders are getting bigger and bigger. And his head eventually looks like a little pea on the top of this huge jacket. The most amazing. And the actual musical performance, it was done live. I know it was done over a few nights, so they probably picked the best.
Of course.
You know, the best takes. But it's a remarkably great performance. And we saw Tina Weymouth on that programme the other night. It started off with the drums. It's on the BBC.
The drums, and it was the bass.
And Tina Weymouth's bass is just lovely. It's got that, you know, that grunty, bumpy, short scale sound. And she's got a real attitude with the bass. You can always tell it's her.
Yeah. And it's funny, I was listening to it specifically then, because I've never really listened to the bass before, because I think when I watched Stop Making Sense, where I really listened to Talking Heads, I wasn't a bass player.
Mm.
And it's like, vroom, boom, 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 boom. And she is like a hippopotamus with like a big kind of tuba euphonium kind of feel to her again, with that short, punchy kind of bass line. And it's a quite beautiful sort of motif that she plays. And also unusual, I would say, compared to what else is going on. I was like, oh, you're playing that, are you? And well, it was lovely. Really, really cool, well, by that the way. Film, she kicks ass.
Yeah, and they couldn't find a bass player in the band, could they? That was it, because she was just hanging around the band, and then she just picked the bass up and started playing.
Well, they all met it. I mean, they were all artists in their own right. They met at the Rhode Island School of Design in the early 70s, and I think she eventually, I think she's married, or she was with Chris, the drummer, Chris Franz.
Yeah, I think they're still married.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and they all decided to move to New York in 1974 to concentrate on making music. And they won a spot opening for the Ramones.
Blimey.
At CBGB's.
Wow.
Which is wonderful. You know, and you're talking about, you know, New York was in the midst of this, like, exciting explosion of music it hadn't seen for, like, probably 10 years. And there were people on the scene like Patti Smith and Tom Verlaine and Richard Hell and Television and the Ramones. And there was this whole thing happening with the city and this kind of rock mainstream going, right, we're going to do this. And another thing that I found out about was a guy called Seymour Stein and his wife Linda. Mm. They actually pursued the band because they wanted to sign them. They wanted to, and it took ages for them. They turn up like groupies at all their gigs.
Is that right?
Sit at the front table and they'd be like mouthing. They know all the songs. And they were just like, we need to work with you. And they were trying to persuade them to work with them. But they had the Ramones. But later on they worked with Katie Lang and also Madonna. And they all introduced British bands, countless British bands, to the American audience, like from Fleetwood Mac, Barclay James Harvest.
Wow.
Echo and the Bunnymen, The Cure, and Smiths. So this guy, Seymour Stein, and his wife Linda were really there. They had an ear. They knew. But it wasn't easy for them, you know, because these guys were going, we're doing something different. And he's going, yeah, but you're straight. We don't want to work with you.
Mm.
So that's a lovely story to know that they were pursued and they were going, no, we're doing this thing.
It's fantastic, isn't it? Yeah. Say no, you know, to get inside. That's remarkable.
Well, they had to persuade them.
Yeah.
Which is well cool, you know.
Well, I think, you know, just going back to the movie, which was directed by Jonathan Demme, is it? Demme?
D-E-M-M-E. Yeah. I know. Is it Demme?
You know, it's a wonderful production. But just focusing on the song here, I mean, the groove. What a groove.
Yeah.
I mean, that guitar. It's fantastic. And it's got such a... You know, it's so staccato, and the bass is like, as you say, the hippopotamus, and then you've got this, you know, but the musicians and the backing vocals, when they all come on it towards the end, you know, they're absolutely, you know, tremendous, yeah. I've actually got an album by by Jerry Harrison, the guitar player, and that's a really good album as well. It's like a solo album, which he did later on. I'm sure we're going to play something from that, but yeah.
Fantastic chemistry, though.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely spot on.
Don't know what's going on. You've been away for far too long. You can't come back and think you are still there. You're out of touch, my baby. My heart just got it, baby. I said, baby, 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 you're out of town. Well, baby. Baby, 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 you're out of town. The girl who wants to run away discovers that she's had a day. It's no good you're thinking that you're all still there. You're out of touch, my baby. Baby, 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 you're out of time. out. Out of there without a doubt. Cause baby, 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 you're out of time. You thought you were a clever girl, giving up your social world. But you can't come back, be the first in line. Oh no, you're obsolete, my baby, my poor old fashioned baby. I said, baby, 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 you're out of time. Well, cause baby, 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 you're out of time. Sing a song now.
The Rolling Stones, Out of Time. And this shorter alternative mix was released on their American compilation album called Flowers, released in the summer of 1967. Sounds very romantic. On London Records.
It was originally released on the British edition of their album Aftermath in 1966, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
As he says, you reading know, the notes. Yeah, it's true.
When you listen to that through headphones again after all these years, because, you know, we've got the vinyl, very crackly. And what an amazing song. Very simply performed, you know, very simple production. It was recorded in America, produced by Andrew Lou Goldham, their manager. And, you know, but it has a complete open sound to it. The playing, you can hear everything. And it has got sort of that American sound because, you know, from over there. But it just goes to prove that a great song is a great song. And it's been covered by everybody, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Everybody and his dog.
No, I was a bit surprised to see that the Bee Gees had done a cover.
Yep.
The Ramones,
yep.
The Manic Street Preachers, and of course Chris Farlow got to number one for a week with it. And what was weird was that Mick Jagger produced Chris Farlow's version.
Yeah,
of Out of Time. It's like
well, Chris Farlow, of course, he keeps popping up everywhere because he was in Atomic Rooster. He's like one of these guys that keep popping up. And our drummer Steve Gibson plays now in his band.
Yes,
and
he does.
Yeah, and we've got this connection with Chris Farlow, although we've never met him yet.
Not yet, no.
And but you know the Chris Farlow version is supposed to be the definitive version of this song, but I prefer this because this is performed by the people that wrote it. And when you listen to that album as well, this particular album, Under Your Thumb. Is on there, and Paint It Black. These are great songs, and you don't think that they wrote them. But, you know, it's hardly surprising them in going so long, the Stones, because they're just brilliant. This early songwriting was brilliant.
Well, this is their first album, which is totally made up of all their own original material.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, and it was the first one. The first album released in true stereophonic sound.
Blimey.
I love that phrase, yeah. By the way. Yeah, so, and you know, when I asked you the other day, I said, what is it about the Stones? What is it about them? Is it, why have they lasted so long? And what appeals to people?
Well, I mean, there's the back catalogue, of course. I mean, they could do a four-hour show and you'd know every song. You know, they could do a five-hour show and you'd know every song. And they select the ones that they want to do. But I think what they've maintained is that Mick Jagger, I mean, you know, regardless of what anybody thinks about him, he's an incredible performer. And even now, at his age, I mean, does he look, how old is he, 70-odd? I mean, he's amazing. He just looks great. And he still does it. And Keith Richard, of course, has no, he's got no business being alive. But he is. And he's there and he's still playing, you know?
Yeah.
And but together.
It's their energy, isn't it? It's their attitude. Yeah, but, and that's the thing. And you know, I get really fed up with this bloody age thing. It's like, just leave it alone. You know, we all know we're on the planet for a short amount of time. Youth is a gift that passes very quickly, like wind.
Very good.
And then, basically, you know, as we were looking today, it's like, you know, it's a privilege to get to any age these days, and especially where we live in the Isle of Man and in Europe, is that where you've got healthcare and you actually can actually, hopefully, if it's curable, have treatment and have and
at
be
no
able
cost to you,
exactly.
Apart from the attack, yeah.
And it's an absolute honour and a privilege to be able to grow old. So you know what? Back off. Let's just have. Should we just talk to each other and let's have fun while we're on the planet together?
Well, talking about fun, Charlie Watts. He keeps saying he's going to retire. He's the oldest member in him. And yeah. Charlie, he's still. And there is nobody. When he passes away, everybody's going to pass away. You know, there's nobody that could replace him in the Stones because he's got that unique groove, and he's the one that creates the sound of that band, in my opinion.
Well, I followed her to the station, the suitcase in my hand. Well, I followed her to the station. Suitcase in my hand. It's hard to tell and it's hard to tell when all your love's in vain. We'll be right back.
that's all mine. When the train left the station, it had two lights on behind.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was The Beautiful Faces. Love in Vain, recorded live at the Fillmore East, which was on 2nd Avenue and 6th Street in New York City on Saturday, the 8th of August, 1970. But who were they supported by?
I know in the notes it's got question marks.
Come on. You see, you hide these things from
me,
especially
it.
On the notes.
Honestly, I giggled when I read this, right?
Go on.
All right, let me give a note. Okay, so that night they were supported by Chicken Shack.
No.
Yeah, and a band called Blodwyn Pig.
Oh, Blodwyn Pig.
I've never heard of them.
Oh, goodness me, a classic.
Oh, right.
Pig.
And also it says, plus the Pig Light Show.
Yeah, of course.
What's
renowned.
That about?
Well, that's right. They were known for it, you know, snorting around.
No, I think, I don't know. I think it was some psychedelic kind of show, and I've just been looking at it now, trying to find out more about the Pig Light Show, because, you know, I wonder what it was.
Well, actually, I don't know. I didn't see it. But Blodwyn Pig, I mean, you know, huge band. And...
Before we start, can I just say, I just feel like I've been to the Church of Rock and Roll. I'm sat there, and I'm listening to this going, that'll do me.
Well, we love the Faces. And it's the perfectly imperfect nature of them. Because Ronnie Wood on that at the beginning, he's lost a couple of the chords there. He's they're probably all drunk as usual. And I always say this about the Faces because they were renowned for it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and the solo's slightly all over the place, you know. And it's you know, also the recorded. I mean, there's quite a lot of distortion there as well. I mean, they were really pushing the...
But the bass was left. There's a lot of space with the bass.
Oh, you know.
Absolutely. The whole thing was so sloppy and loose and it wasn't at all... You know, he could have gone up to these octaves and done the fifth and he just kept it really straight.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking, are you going to do anything more? And he went, no, I'm just good, man. Because I love that. That is so hard to do.
The Americans would not have done that because the thing is, the American artists, I always think, you know, they are very, very accomplished and very perfect. And a lot of the British artists are quite different, but they've got attitude. I mean, there's absolutely nothing about it. I mean, Ian McLagan on keyboards, we love him. I mean, he was in the Small Faces, of course. Ronnie Wood, who, of course, later on joined the Rolling Stones after Brian Jones died. The last track with the Stones, Brian Jones was in there, of course.
Mm.
But, you know, and Kenny Jones on drums. I mean, they just had something as a band. And, you know, the more we listen to them, the more we're loving the Faces, aren't we, really?
And it's not, you know, and I know it's not just about, oh, going stuck in time or anything. It's about a moment in time when the synergy and the chemistry was perfect for us as musicians. And, but if some band did that today, it would be the same. It's not, it's just a feel, it's a connection. Because I don't, when I listen to music, I don't visualise them. The music, it creates the pictures and the feel, you know?
But, you know, and we say this a lot, and, you know, the art of recording now is, it's too perfect. And I'm absolutely determined on our next record that we're not going to do it. I want that feel. I want that sloppiness. I want some mistakes in there. You know, not on purpose, but it's just to capture the moment. And if you're pushing it and there's something happening, then, you know, there might be slight timing issues. There might be stuff. But, to you know, that track, it's a beautiful thing. I think the audience were dubbed on at the end there. Cause it sounded like a, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big mm. place. But,
yeah.
You know, it's just got something that music now just does not have. It's all too perfect. It's all too clean and shiny and scrubbed and beautiful and zingy. You know, and that's yeah. grungy and dirty. And Bill Graham put those concerts on at the Fillmore, didn't he? He brought a lot of people over.
You just read my mind. Ah. That's really weird you say that, because I was thinking, who is Bill Graham? Because on these posters, it sort of says, Bill Graham presents in New York. And he had this whole series of concerts. He put on acts like Savoy Brown, Fleetwood Mac, Fairport Convention, Jethro Tull, Procol Harum, Santana, Miles Davis and the Byrds. And they had every Friday and Saturday night, well, they had he ran the Fillmore East and West, and
yeah.
And he had Winterland Arena, so because he was actually a Jewish child that actually escaped from Germany and came over as a refugee and survived.
No, is that right?
Yeah, so he, and I was reading about his history, because the other night I was just thinking, my goodness, you know, who is this guy? And when you read his story, you just go, oh, my God. And he tried to put, he was doing some charity do. And what happened was that this guy had he had to get like a dance license for this venue where he wanted to do a second charity fundraiser. And they wouldn't give him a license. So he went through this other guy to get the license, who actually owned the building. And he ended up basically taking it on. But he was a complete music lover. And he's been so, he was at the centre of the 60s counterculture, both in San Francisco and in California.
Well, he also, I'm reading the Jimmy Page book at the moment. What a sad book that is towards the end. It's,
I haven't read
it
yet.
It's beautiful at the beginning, and it's so full of hope and thrust in excellence and then heroin. And oh, well, when you read it, I was in virtually in tears the other day because I love Jimmy Page. You know, I'm born on his birthday, you know, and I just love that.
Yeah, well, you're born on the same date.
Yeah, indeed.
It's not.
Date, yeah.
It doesn't belong to him. It, you know, it's a yeah. day in the calendar.
But Bill Graham put a lot of their shows on. Some of the biggest shows that they had, and Bill Graham was putting those on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
But you so need he's, people
he's a
like
legend.
That.
You a
need
legend.
Characters
yeah.
like that. You need people who actually believe in the music, and that's the one thing that I think is lacking in it. And I love these movements that you can see now in the Keep Music Live Venues Trust as well. You know, protecting venues in the UK, and when we're spending a lot of more time in Europe the rest of this year, and I'm really looking forward to like meeting people and actually getting into these live venues and meeting the characters who actually love live music so much. It's a part of their life.
Well, we are going to have a wholesale push on trying to get Start Campbell Band and anybody who wants to come with us, any bands that want to come with us, to do this sort of thing again. And yeah. let's get back to true rock and roll. We'll be right back.
Television and Foxhole from their second studio album called Adventure, which was released in April 1978 on the Elektra record label.
We own it on red vinyl, of course. It's downstairs.
So excited about that, you know.
Great, you know.
I love the fact it's red.
Well, Tom Verlaine.
Because it was black in the USA, by the way.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So the UK got the red vinyl edition.
Well,
get in there.
It's a great sounding record, you know. And the thing that strikes me about that track instantly is the bass. And I actually,
I'm looking at you like my head just went up like an emu's. What?
And of course the interaction with the guitar, because I'm pretty sure that they were influenced by Family. You know, and if you listen to something like Burlesque and the interaction between the guitar and the bass, there's something that do. It's like a really cool bass, and it just works so well with the it works so well with the guitar. And Verlaine, you know, great guitar player for the time. I mean, he hardly used any distortion. He was a jazz master chap, he still is, jazz master through a Fender or Vox amp. Mm-hmm. And of course Johnny Marr, who later on took on the Jazzmaster, you know, and with that very clean sound, although a very British thing with Johnny Marr, and it's and different, but there's similarities in some ways. And great song again, great production, just great.
The Spencer Davis Group, Gimme Some Loving, which was released as a single on the 28th of October, way back in the fantastic year of 1966. On the Fontana label in the UK and the United Artists label in the US of A. It went to number 2 in the UK, by the way, and number 7 in the US. It was just a hit.
produced by Chris Blackwell, who later went on Fry Island Records, of course.
Of course. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
But additionally, fettled with by our friend Jimmy Miller. Well, he's not a friend, but he seems like a friend because he's produced some great records.
Yeah, because Jimmy kind of sped it up a bit for the US release and added some extra overdubs and stuff, which the band played. And, just made it a bit more zingy for the American market because he knew that's what they needed.
Well, all I've got to say about that is Hammond B3 organs through a Leslie 122. Distorted. Now that is Hammond to me, because when that comes in and you can hear that whirling speaker, because it's a rotation speaker with the, you know, with the Hammond, it's amazing. And the dirt, the grit, you know, loud. And did they record that in half an hour? They arranged it,
well,
wrote it.
Basically, what happened when I was reading about this, and I love the, by the way, Muff Winwood.
Yeah.
Who has a brother called Muff?
Well, I don't know.
Steve Winwood has a brother called Muff Winwood because he was part of the Spencer Davis group. And what happened with, they'd had all these hits, like they'd had number one hits with Keep On Running and Somebody Help Me. And then You're Only As Good As Your Last Broadcast. So they released this single called When I Come Home, but it didn't do very well. So basically, there was a recording session coming up. Chris Blackwell booked them into a rehearsal room at the Marquee and ordered them to write a song. As you do.
Of course.
So they were there at 11 o'clock in the morning. Within half an hour, they kind of, like Stevie Winwood was singing, give me some loving. And they got the whole arrangement done. So they went off down to the local calf. And so Chris Blackwell rocked up at 12 o'clock to have a look, to see how they're getting on, saw the gear set up, no band, and went down to the cafe and freaked out on them and said,
no.
How could you do this to me? Went, don't worry, we got it sorted. Just chill. Went back and said, here you go, we've got this. And he just went, floor, jaw.
Yeah, well.
Get in there.
Stevie Winwood is a genius, you know. And anyway, beautiful. Great record.
But sometimes, isn't that interesting, though, that you have to have a little bit of discipline, or it's really good, the synergy between the between it. Anyway, can I just say, by the way, we've got to finish now with the last song.
No, not the end of the show.
Yeah, it's my turn this week
to
say it's thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Supertone Show. We play the music live, we talk about it, we don't talk about it beforehand, and everything is just from the heart, and I hope you really enjoy it.
So we're going to play you out now with Pink Floyd, one of our massive favourite bands. The interesting thing is Dave Gilmour, I don't know if you saw, but he's auctioning off 120
that.
Of his guitars, including his famous black one, which he did everything on, you know. And he's giving the money, well, he's putting the money into his foundation, charitable foundation. That's fantastic, you know. The only sad thing about it, when you see all these guitars going up, is that I know that black one will probably never get played again. All that'll happen, it'll get put in a vault or on a wall or some, you know, big wig's going to buy it. No, it's not going to get played. And that is really, really, really sad. But anyway.
Let's just hope somebody bids for it that actually wants to play it.
Yeah. No, that'd be really cool.
Because guitars are made to be played. They're not like a piece of art that you hang on a wall and just, you know, they're there. They're a tool.
But a lot. Yeah, exactly.
They write letters. They say things.
Well, it's very sad because, you know, many of the great guitars now are in vaults all over the place. Anyway, back to Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
And great track. And what I love about this, again, I'm afraid I'm going to mention it, bass. Yes.
What is it with you and bass today?
I love bass. You know, I love bass.
I know you do, but you love drums. In fact, you just love music. And all that's the bottom line, darling.
But this is great. And also, I love the synth wind on this as well. You know, it's that, it's which reminds me a little bit of Frank Zappa's Yellow Snow at the beginning, but it's all good.
Oh, look, well, thanks so much for joining us, and keep in touch on Facebook or on Twitter or Instagram, and we'll play out with a song called One of These Days by Pink Floyd, and we'll catch you later.
I'm going to go to the hospital.